You gonna do it?
Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community, the community education network.com, the podcast Conscious Corners on Mondays with Professor Amin-Ra and Joe Hembrick. And this show are platforms to provide information to enhance humanity and to give necessary truth to the masses. And let me show the website to everybody, because we had a show on Monday that was very pertinent with great information. So I want to show everybody the website. Check it out. Excellent show by Professor Amin-Ra and Joe Hembrick. I will show that a little later because we got started a little late. So let me just continue. All right. So now I'm your host, Rosky Mascani. And tonight's topic is how to protect male and female relationships being on code with a dress code. Tonight's guest is Brother Thomas, one of our website and podcast members. This is his seventh show. Brother Thomas provides us with excellent educational content that's considered life-saving information. Good evening, Brother Thomas. How are you? Please tell us some things about yourself and commence to our topic for this evening.
First, I'd like to begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. All praise due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Master of the Day of Requital. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who appeared in the person of Master Muhammad. And I bear witness the most honorable Elijah Muhammad is the exalted Christ, the only apostle. And I further bear witness the Abdul's far kind of divine reminder, leader, teaching guide in our midst. And I greet my beloved brothers in the greeting words of peace of Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
I've been in education. This is my 17th year working at Compton Unified School District, but far longer than that, I've been a member of the Nation of Islam and a member of the Fruit of Islam in the Nation of Islam, a military sect of the nation that trains men to be obedient, courteous, respectful, to deliver our people to knowledge of self, knowledge of God, knowledge of the God within self. And we also have a class called Muslim Girls Training General Civilization Class for the women, the queens in the Nation of Islam. And these two factions of the Nation of Islam are created to reinstill a code that takes the black man and woman from the level of a made savage, a made uncivilized, hypersexual, non-factor, into the state of the original black man and woman that they were created to be. It teaches us how to carry ourselves in a way that not only preserves the black male and female relationships, but protects it. It's the only major organization, spiritual system, that has created a process to reinstill the black man and woman to the state of oneness, to focus on that, and has been doing that for over 90 years. When you know, people see the Nation of Islam, representatives of the Nation of Islam, and they already know that we're a different cut from the overall black population of people. We have a different mindset. And often, because of that obvious distinction our people tend to have a lot of misconceptions about what we do and what we believe. But one thing they do know is whoever decides to join the Nation of Islam, male or female, there's an immediate transformation that takes place. They walk upright. They have a different attitude about themselves. Their lenses in society is made very, very keen to be able to see the traps that society sets for us to further keep us enslaved, bound, and uncivilized. But they notice that there's a shine, there's a respect, a self-respect, and a respect for others. But one thing that they really don't know and observe and realize is the highest respect for the Black male and female relationship that we exhibit in our ways and actions. And that's what kind of got me to think about what to talk about. I was talking with Brother Rosicky, and we were talking about a situation of our people and how we carry ourselves that threatens the very fabric of Black male-female relationships. I graduated from Cal State Long Beach. I was a part of the Black leadership there. I was Black Student Union Vice President, second Vice President. I was Black, and I matriculated to Black Student Union President. I took quite a bit of Black Studies classes at Cal State Long Beach, and quite a few addressed the topic of the Black male-female relationship. I was involved with the Black Consciousness Conference, and we always had some type of a forum or platform that also addressed Black male-female relationships and how important they were for us as a people to fight for and to preserve. But one thing I never heard was a code of conduct to secure our relationship, to secure one another in that relationship, as it pertains to how we carry ourselves. I mean, how we dress, a dress code. Today, and even then, you know, we had different factions and belief systems that saturated itself into the mindset of Black people as it pertains to positive Black male-female relationships. We have been influenced by several different cultural influences, several different arenas of knowledge, and Black people, we're pretty much, because of the threat to our relationships that we've been exposed to since our sojourn here in our 400 years of chattel slavery, quasi-slavery, and mass incarceration. We're like on the job training when it comes to relations. We're like trying to figure it out as we go along. Because one thing that was stripped from us was the science of relationships, the science of mating, the science of how to choose a mate, the science of how to connect and become one with a mate. And most of all, the science of how to secure a mate and secure oneself as it, in a relationship as it pertains to you securing that mate by securing yourself appropriately. And what I mean by this is I've noticed the main thing that I've noticed was we do not practice securing the relationship as as appropriately as we should when it comes to how we carry ourselves. I think the dress code is very important because when a man and woman is in a relationship, how they carry themselves is very important to how other people see them and how that relationship is secured. But what I mean is this. We always hear women say, I have a right to wear what I want. This is my body. I have a right to do with my body what I want to do. And that mindset right there is against culturally, against the way in which Black people originally practiced oneness with each other in a relationship. It's my body. I can do with what I will. And we men, you know, we carry ourselves in that bravado fashion as well, not considering how we carry ourselves. But let's focus on the women right now. I see loosely clad women in relationships. I see their husbands allowing them to be dressed any kind of way. And I see a high domestic violence rate amongst our people. I see conflicts that we have with each other that's rooted in jealousy and insecurity. When a woman is dressed, is in a relationship and is dressed in a way that is provocative, that attracts a certain kind of attention from other men. And by doing so, that woman is risking being approached, disrespected, assaulted, aggressed upon sexually by that provocative dress, and resulting in her man having to defend her honor like any man would do. But I feel that when that happens, that act of provocative dress not only jeopardizes her safety, it also jeopardizes her man's safety. Now we're talking about what he needs to do to defend her honor by whatever means possible, which can either have him harm somebody, have him being harmed by somebody, or resulting in him being incarcerated, or both him and the man that he now feels he needs to fight and to protect his woman's honor being incarcerated. Either way it goes, it causes a conflict and it jeopardizes the Black male-female relationships. Code of conduct in how we dress. If a man were to carry himself and dress in a way that made his body revealing to the world or other women and attracting the wrong attention or even attracting other men, because now we live in a society where that kind of behavior is promoted and practiced amongst us along with other people. So when he does that, he's also risking the woman doing something or going off or doing something that she feels she needs to do to, as a result of the man being approached by maybe another woman or looked at in a certain way by another woman. We're doing things that cause harm and damage to the relationship just simply by how we carry ourselves. In the Nation of Islam, we're taught that our women as well as our men must dress in a modest way out of respect and to protect the relationship, out of respect of the relationship and to protect the relationship. Black women, America is a rape culture. America has very little to no respect for women in general, let alone the Black woman. We're taught in the Nation of Islam that if anybody puts their hands on our woman, we are to make sure that they don't put their hands on our woman or anybody else's woman ever again. We're taught to defend our woman with our life, but we also teach our woman to don't take that lightly, that they must also make sure that they carry themselves to not attract unwanted attention that can provoke us or provoke someone to disrespect them and to have us risk our life to protect their honor when they didn't protect their honor themselves. And it goes both ways. I feel that regardless of this equal rights to self-expression and women's sexuality, that very code of this death style culture we live in violates the sanctity of any relationship. You must carry yourself in a way to protect the relationship. You must make sure that the way you carry yourselves when your man is not present is just as safe and secure and respectful when he is present. Same with the man. The Nation of Islam, we're taught to practice this. We have restrictive laws that teaches us that we abide by upon being a member that says we cannot carry ourselves in a way that is lesser than ourselves. We cannot have sex, premarital sex, fornicate, adultery. We cannot pat sisters we cannot hold sisters or fondle sisters not our wife, a woman that we're married to. We cannot look at sisters in the eyes for more than a few seconds without looking away, because that right there, it also violates the respect that we should have for a woman. But today I've noticed that the code of conduct as it pertains to the black male-female relationship is threatened. It's making us look like we have no sense of self-respect, no sense of securing ourselves, no sense of securing our women. It's almost like somebody saying, you know, since I have a right to swim anywhere, I'm going to put on an outfit and dipped in blood and swim in a pool of sharks because I have a right to swim anywhere. America's filled with sharks. America's filled with, it's a rape culture that has people that are constantly assaulted, women and men. Women are raped. One out of six women in America is raped before the age of 30. You could go on the computer and type, you know, sexual assault or people that are that have been convicted of sexual assault in your area, and it has dots all around your area to where that information is useless based upon how many people are registered as a sex offender. So we're in an environment of hypersexual sharks that can't control themselves, and that are more prone to assaulting a vulnerable man or woman, or a man or woman whose body is easily accessible. So I liken that to a woman being dressed provocatively, walking through America. I liken that to a person with a blood-soaked outfit on, choosing to swim among sharks. And if you're a couple, I say that that's a major violation, because now you're threatening the safety of your partner. If anything happens to you, a partner is bound to protect you with their life. And it's as if the individual's exploiting that pledge by making themselves easy to be assaulted and disrespected, to where that person now, their life is put on the line to defend the honor of a person who didn't defend their own honor by dressing and carrying themselves in a way that was less provocative, to act as a defense against the rapist sexual assault registered as a sex offender-like environment that we live in. The Nation of Islam focuses on this, and every member of the Nation of Islam pledges to carry themselves in a way to not only respect the Black man and woman in relationship, but defend it with their life and make sure that they don't carry themselves in a way to threaten or exploit that honorable privilege and policy to defend yourself, to defend the life of your partner with your life. That's my position. And I'm open for questions. I'm open for comments. I believe, in closing, like I said, the Nation of Islam, it gets a bad rap when it comes to how passionate we are about our people and the methods and measures that we take to reinstill the God-mindedness and the righteous original state of the Black man and woman with it, you know, to reinstill that original state upon which we were created as the mothers and fathers of civilization. Those who respected each other so much that we could wear something, you know, back in the days we used to wear, we used to wear whatever we wanted, whether it was clothing covering or not in Africa. And we had the most civilized mindset until we were colonized by a man who had to wrap himself up with clothing because his lewd behavior had to be hidden behind the clothing. He couldn't be in the presence of a woman that was bare-breasted without his lust being aroused, without him wanting to rape and assault her. We had the highest mindset. But in today's time, the nation addresses that. Our women are dressed from head to toe covered modestly. Our men are carry themselves in a similar fashion to ensure that we respect each other, we respect the relationship, and we protect each other. And we don't violate ourselves and risk our relationship being violated by someone in American society that has, you know, based upon the hypersexual environment that we live in. So that's my position. I open the floor for any comments or questions.
Okay, we're gonna start with Brother Mashinda. Brother Mashinda.
Hey, good evening.
All right, do you have a question for Brother Thomas or a comment?
No, just welcome back, Brother Thomas. Thank you for presenting tonight. You know, you raised a lot of great points. You know, I've of course, growing up and even, you know, now, you know, I have friends that are, you know, with the Nation of Islam. And so I know a lot about, you know, a lot of the principles and things that you're talking about. I've taken a long look at them and things like that, you know, so it provides discipline, organization, and your thought and your everyday life. And, you know, I think that's great, you know, and I think, you know, so overall, I think, you know, even away from that, you know, I think it's still dead on it that we have a problem in society with our young people and some older people, whatever, but you just talk about generational development. Is underdeveloped, you know, and it's, you know, like you say, you pointed out a lot of, I think truths in terms of the fallout of the lack of, caring for oneself and caring for others, you know, and, you know, for, so anyway, thank you again. I just wanted to make a comment like that. You take care of yourself and thank you.
All right, thanks for that, Brother Mashinda. Brother Hembrick. He may have stepped away. We're going to go to Professor Ra. Professor Ra?
No, oh, here.
Joe, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, question, comments?
I don't have any questions. Well, I got a question. One question was when he was speaking of... You know, good evening, Brother Thomas, first of all.
Good evening, Big Brother Henry. How you doing, sir?
All right. You're a history teacher, correct?
English teacher, sir.
Oh, English. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm mistaken. What was that? Oh, something said on my computer. Anyway, you know, I kind of appreciate, you know, some things that the nation is about and whatnot. I still, you know, have questions regarding its foundational practices. The only reason I bring this up is you're referring to them quite a bit.
Yes, sir. And I'll address any questions you have about our foundational practices.
I'm kind of hip to them, but the historical aspects of what you're talking about that being African and all of that, I kind of disagree with you there. You talked about colonization and this sort of thing. And the folks that, you know, that created the religion, not the Nation of Islam, but Islam, period, you know, were the first invaders of, you know, Africans and African culture. So when you make references about them bringing us back to the culture that we had, they came in kind of disrupting culture. Long time before the Europeans and Christians did so. So I'm in disagreement with you there. And I was going to ask you, what references are you using regarding, you know, you making that statement about, you know, African people cultural practices in the Nation of Islam, bringing that back to bear? That was one question I had. And, you know, you made reference to some individuals that are in the nation as far as the leadership goes. And I'm a Malcolm man, you know, much more for his manhood, standing up for Black people, you know, more so than the practices and the theology of the Nation of Islam, which he kind of, I think he built, you know, up from where it was. And I got another question. A couple more comments I'm gonna, you know, bring up, then I'm gonna let you address them. I was listening to the brother Louis Farrakhan, and on a video that he did one time, and he was making reference about us being cursed because we are not following God and the like. And he made a reference to our hair on our head not being like the eyebrow, like the hair of our eyebrows. He said they're supposed to be the same. And he said, because we're cursed, ours is not, in terms of hair kinky and eyebrows straight. I heard this out of his own mouth. I was surprised when he said that, because, you know, his hair is kind of straight now, but I remember when he was Louis X, you know, he had kinky hair just like me. I don't know what he got on his head or him coming to something with God that straightened it out. And the last thing I'm going to make comment about is Elijah Muhammad's last book that he wrote. Forget the name of it. It has a black and red cover. I'm sure you have it. You know the name of the book I'm talking about, Brother Thomas?
Is it Message to the Black Man?
No, the last book he wrote.
Our Savior Has Arrived.
I'm about the Fall of America.
Fall of America, yes, sir.
But on page 150 of that book, Elijah Muhammad is making a statement about us not even identifying with the cultural African because of his dress, you know, dressing in skins and this and that, and hair, and, oh, it says unshaven and whatnot. We should not be trying to identify with them. That's in his own book. So, you know, because of these reasons, I kind of disagree with definitely a lot of the theological stuff that, you know, that's being put down by them, just from what I've studied from my, you know, historical studies. You know, I'm deep into this, and when I see something contrary to what's really there, kind of puts up my antennas. But anyway, I just wanted to make those comments right there, and I got one more that I'll make later, maybe when you guys come back by me. Oh, and let me say this, that on the continent of Africa, those invaders are still all across the north and some of the east and west too, you know, because when they invaded, a lot of the Africans ventured over to those areas as Islam spread across North Africa. But anyway, I'll leave it there and you can address anything I've said. Maybe I can come back and give a comment about what you have to say about that.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your comments, Brother Henrik. First of all, I'd like to address the one of the first comments you made about those who created Islam being the initial enslavers of Africans.
I said Arabs, not created. Yeah, but Arabs invaded. This was
That's who you're referring to, the Arabs.
Right.
And I'm going to assume that, you know, what you mean by Arab is the Caucasian Arab that you see in Northeast Africa today?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to also assume that you mean the same Arab that inhabits like Morocco today as well.
In Africa. Kind of dark.
No, I just need to because Morocco is
on the dress.
Morocco is the is in Africa, and it's the home of the Moors, and it's inhabited by a white Arab like Muslim. Egypt today, Cairo in particular, is inhabited by a white Arab like so-called Muslim. All these places that I'm mentioning were invaded, is Africa, invaded by this white-looking Caucasoid claiming to be a Muslim in these African countries. Morocco is an example. Egypt is an example. Libya. Arabia, which is not a separate country, it's actually northern Africa, northwest Africa, pretty much going west a little bit, because it was separated. It's separated by the Black Sea. You know, not an ocean.
That was a colony of Africa. Those.
So what I'm saying is, because I just respond and didn't really interrupt you while you were speaking. What I'm saying is all of these places were historically for hundreds of thousands of years inhabited by African people. And all of them were invaded by the same person. Hyksos, Persian, Byzantinian invader. And upon doing so, they enslaved and they ran out the original indigenous inhabitants. They also, in the process, stole the spiritual system and claimed it for themselves. They did not, they weren't the people that originally practiced the spiritual system of Islam. They didn't create it, because Islam can't be created. It's the first spiritual practice of all humanity called obey me, submit, obey God. That's what submission to the will of Allah is. Obey God. That's the first religion. That's so-called religion, but I call it a spiritual system. Obey God. That's the first command that all humanity had. Obey God. We practiced that before the invasion for hundreds of thousands of years. It's the root of every African spiritual system. Obey. Obey the Creator. So I challenge your position as it pertains to Arabia, Muslims originate, you know, originally enslaving Africans, because the Muslims, the original Muslims that inhabited that, what was called in Dr. Wesley Muhammad's books called, and I have two references. One is called Black Arabia and the African Origin of Islam by Dr. Wesley Muhammad, who is a PhD scholar of religion, religious studies, and the history of Islam. He also has another book called, where you can trace the phenotype and complexion of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, and Isa, or Jesus, called Black Gods, God's Black Prophets, deconstructing the myth of the white Muhammad of Arabia and Jesus of Jerusalem. He proves through intensified research and study, and he proves from scholars of the so-called the Arabian world today, historical scholars that have recorded, and he even have pictures that were recorded of an African Arabia, that he calls Afrabia. And these invaders, once they infiltrated, once they conquered, like they've always done, like they've done all over the world, but these Persian Hyksos who've invaded, they were the ones who enslaved and stole the spiritual practices, like they stole the spiritual practices in Egypt, in Morocco, everywhere they go. They steal. They had no civilization before they left the hills and caves. They stole everything. They stole everything they could get their hands on. They invaded and raided the libraries, the universities. They created philosophers to try to compensate for the knowledge that they could not claim. I also like to address, you said you were Malcolm, you know, Malcolm, what about Malcolm? But Malcolm was in the Nation of Islam for 12 years. The Malcolm that you so love is the Malcolm that was in the Nation of Islam for 12 years. The Malcolm that, the one that you know, oh, so well, that you say you know, so, oh, so well, was an obedient Muslim follower of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And then you wanna measure and weigh that Malcolm with 1 year after he departs the nation, while he was in an attempt to try to get back in, until this Caucasian devil killed him before he'd have a chance to reconcile. I challenge anybody to say they down with Malcolm and they haven't even joined the FOY to see what about the FOY was so great that Malcolm sacrificed 12 years of his life to be one of the most prolific ministers that the nation produced. 12 years, unquestionably. I challenge anybody that says that, that's never, never stood up on a Sunday and went to FOY class on a Monday and at least tried it for 365 days to Malcolm's 12 years. I'm shocked on your loyalty in that regard. Now, in terms of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said about the way, you know, kind of separating separating us from the Africans that were dressed immodestly. According to the history of African people, we are the most civilized people on the planet. And we are the longest existing people on the planet. And according to the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we committed every sin within the span of the millions of years we've been here. We committed every sin that you can think of today. It wasn't done in a highly concentrated environment and in such a high concentrated, acts of committing those sins, but we did. We committed every sin. Every sin you see this Caucasian has committed and is committing by creating this sinful America, we committed. It wasn't something we did regularly over those millions of years we've been here, but we did it. And for us to derobe and take our clothes off, and for us to remove from ourselves the fine linen of a civilized man, that's what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad was addressing as something that we separate ourselves from. Anything that reflects us regressing from a state of civility, of uncivility. Removing our clothes and having our women and our men dress loosely amongst ourselves to where the lower self or the sinful ways and thoughts in which exist in every man and woman can be exploited and aroused. Even though we had societies that carry themselves in the highest regard with women and men that were, dressed revealing, we still fell victim to our lower selves, and we still fell victim to those times when we were acting other than ourselves as it pertains to how we addressed in each other. We've committed all those sins. There's still, a way in which not wearing clothing can be synonymous with, living in an uncivilized fashion, naked, like the Caucasian did in the hills and caves of Europe, naked in caves. He was talking about any deed. We can't moralize Africa as if it was, as if it was sinless and was it not impervious to flaw, impervious to acts of uncivility. That's unrealistic. And the Honorable Louis Farrakhan realistically addresses the condition of our people from the original state of godly civility to that of ungodly civility that brought about the making of the devil in the first place. That devil we see today, Satan we see in this pale, frail, melanin exterior, is a reflection of all the things that was inside of us. It had to be. We're the mother and father of civilization. We birthed them. So whatever they are had to come from somewhere. You also talked about that lecture that the Honorable Ms. Louis Farrakhan said about the hair. I saw it, and I saw that a brother had compared Malcolm's response about skin tone, hair, and being prideful of your color, the color of your skin and kinky hair. And it compared Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's response when he was breaking down the history of the hair texture of the original man. That's all it was. As in according to the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the original man and woman had wavy hair, similar to the straight and waviness of your eyebrow. This texture was conducive for the original man so that when he chose to reside on any part of the planet Earth, his hair was ready to kink up or get even less wavier, depending on where he chose to reside. He had the perfect physical structure to genetically structural change based upon wherever he chose to reside. And kinky hair is not, the extreme kink of the hair is not the texture that the original man had. That's the extreme opposite of what the original man had. When we descended into the jungles of Africa, where the habitat was so extreme, where we took off our clothes, where we became very one with the wilds of Africa, the hair kinked up to reflect the wilds and the extreme challenges of that environment. And when we choose to travel to any part of the planet Earth, one of the first genetic structural changes that take place is the exterior. The skin gets darker or a little bit lighter, always melanated though. The hair gets kinkier or a little bit straighter, but always melanated though. The eyes get darker or a little bit lighter, but always melanated though. The nose gets wider or the nostrils get narrower, but always melanated and always able to inhale high concentrations of oxygen that habitat produces based upon its amount of herbage and the wind that blows in that habitat as well. Our limbs get longer or shorter. Our lung capacity gets larger or it contracts smaller, depending on the pressure, the habitat, the wind, the environment, the seasons. Islam, if you want to go to where Africa is the original place in which all life began, Islam, we teach that it's northern Africa in the what's so-called Middle Eastern region, we teach that Islam is the root of African spiritual systems, not because it's Arabic, not because of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessed be upon him, but because the very name of Islam means the first instruction that Allah gave all humanity, totally submit to his will. Obey the creator. That is what Islam means. And I hope I was able to answer your questions, brother.
Okay, we going to move on to Professor Ra.
Can I rebut a second?
Yeah, but let's get to Ra because we moving on in time and we.
Brother Ra, can you, you're on mute, sir.
Unmute, bro. Ra.
I can see the Joe letting respond while he's
out.
Okay.
Well, I know you're not going to do it, but let me just suggest that you seek some references that are outside the Nation of Islam in your analysis of what you're saying, because some of that just isn't so. But I know, the theology that they come with. But anyway. And you're talking about the disrespect on respect Malcolm totally, and the stuff that he was saying at the time of doing those 12 years was stuff that he was getting from others outside the nation, namely Dr. John Henry Clark. for one. And as far as his, you know, devotion to the religion, he was there until a particular thing happened where he had to question Elijah Muhammad on that, where the break occurred about the children that he fathered, which brought about them wanting to kill him. Okay, so if that's teaching such a high cultural thing, I got two daughters myself. And if some old man is screwing them, I don't give a damn if he's Jesus, Muhammad, Allah, anybody. I'm going to have an issue with it, and I'm going to address it. So in light of that, this high cultural value moral thing you talk about is a farce, which Malcolm saw and decided it's time for him to go another route. So I just, and as far as some of the, you know, the religion didn't start to 711 AD. That's when it became a religion with, you know, the Prophet Muhammad. You got hundreds of thousands of years before that where there was already a law. You ever heard of Ma'a? That's what the ancients went by. That was the moral code that kept them in check from creating or committing all of these plethora of sins that you claim that they were committing, like before, you know, Islam came to restore that. And I'll just leave it at that. And, you know, appreciating what you said, I would just like to say there's a lot of other references out there. Even along with the physical characteristics thing he was talking about, Dr. Martin, he's wrote a couple of works on that. There's other historians, John Clark, Joseph Ben Yochanan, John Jackson, J.A. Rogers. I suggest, and even some white boys who have written the truth about things I'm talking about. And I suggest you get outside of the nation's realm to study, and maybe you can come to a more fuller conclusion, because they don't have the answers on all of that at all. But anyway, appreciating what you said. Thanks for the opportunity for me to respond.
Right. Appreciating what's been said, if I understand correctly. And first of all, I want to say a sante sana to you, brother Thomas, for your presentation. It's always good to hear diversity of thought, and a lot of the things you say. You have to give credit to the Nation of Islam for converting a lot of people into practices that, as you say, is part of the conduct that is required of Muslims, both male and female. There's no doubt that they have transformed some men into better men and some women into better women, and that they have many members that have had beautiful relationships, including Minister Farrakhan, who I think has been married over 60-some years, as well as other brothers and sisters that make up the Nation of Islam. But, you know, they have people that start off with relationships also in Islamic communities, and they separate for whatever reason. Well, the few questions that I have, and you know, I work very close with the minister. He knows me by my first name. We're on first name basis. I mean, as far as when he addressed me and calls me out, and I spoke before him on many occasions and introduced him to be guest speaker on many occasions, along with him and Dr. Khalid Muhammad, who married you.
Yes, sir.
I remember some of the things that you had to prove before you could get married, as far as your ability to take care of your wife for 4 or 5 years or something like that. And
yes, sir.
You had to show proof that you could do that and all that. You know, I attended that. And when it comes down to when you said I don't know if you said the nation had a different mindset for men and women, and you quoted the Fruit of Islam, and also there's a woman's brocade. I can't remember their names right now.
MGT.
What they call?
The MGT.
Yeah, the MGT. One of my friends' daughter is a high-ranking MGT in Chicago, and they're there now. What do you mean a different mindset? Different from whom and what?
Different from what was forced upon us and that we practice in this, since our sojourn here in America. It reinstills the original mindset that was taught and given to us by Allah, the creator, in the beginning. It forces us to resurrect the original ways in which we carry ourselves, honor the Black man and woman and child in that regard.
I remember in the Roots, when they brought Kunta Kinte over, you know, they said, As-salamu alaykum, he was a Muslim. And this goes back to what Brother Hemrick was saying. There was a lot of brothers and sisters from different parts of Africa that were captured or either somehow came here and forced into enslavement that were not Muslims, that had customs and values that were based upon their continent, if they were Citadere, if they were in the station, were not Nilotic people living by the rivers, if they were nomadic people or that lived out in the desert. They all had different customs and different things and different cultural apparatus. Some were vegetarian, some heard meat. Are you saying that there was some uniformity for the Africans that were brought here, that they all came from a value system that was similar? Or did they have diversity in cultural expressions? Because most people think the continent of Africa is one of the most diverse continents of human beings. Different customs, different values, different languages and different ways of seeing life. And when you say different, what do you mean mindset?
Okay, like the African, you talked about Kunta Kinte. I'm not.
No, what I said was when the depiction of Africans being in the Holocaust of enslavement, when they first came here,
mm-hmm.
The movie projected them as a Muslim through Kunta Kinte.
Yes.
By him saying, you know, As-salamu alaykum, to the brother on the boat when they were in captivity in the boat. And then and I'm asking you, that, you know, we know that Africa is 12 million square miles,
mm-hmm.
and there are different customs and different languages and different way back. We can go back to the Dogons and Stars before, you know, and we can go back to the origins of Ethiopia, the origins of all of that. Are you saying that they had Islamic customs, almost everyone that came over here and was enslaved? Or was there a diversity of people that came here with different mindsets? As you said, the nation teaches us to go back to the original mindset. And I'm saying that there was a lot of diversity.
Yes, sir.
On the continent. Definitely. At that time.
That's what I agree. My position before was we've been here for, according to the teaching of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, We've been here for trillions of years. And we've had trillions of years for us to, not only in Africa, but throughout the world, you know, spread from the original place upon which the first man and woman was set, and then expand, and with that expansion, inherit and evolve to different cultures, practices, spiritual systems, and so forth, languages, foods, dress. Yes, it was very, very diverse. What the nation teaches is we go back to the original creation of humanity, of the original man, back to before there was an earth.
Well, that's back what to, I realize my teachers.
Yes,
the difference between the colored man and the original man. Who mm-hmm. is the original man? They he don't even refer to us as African. He calls the Asian black man.
Asiatic
black man.
And it's not Asia or Asian, it's Asiatic. Like, and the root of Asia, according to the teaching, meaning black. But yes, sir. It's you're right, Baba Ra. Everything was diverse. Everything, you know, Africa consists of several different diverse spiritual systems and practices that we evolved over time. And matter of fact, it's
not just spiritual, cultural.
Yeah. So I include when I say spirit, I include that too, because I believe that everything, you know, that Africans do mm-hmm. is rooted in the spirit, rooted in what we, it starts okay. from within, and then it goes without. Okay. Yes,
sir. Then you said, is there a difference between the teachings when it comes down to dressing and understanding of a woman's role and male role in society when they come out in from the Nation of Islam and Al-Islam?
Is there a difference between, say that again?
Is there a different dress code for the Nation of Islam, the Nation of Islam and Al-Islam? Because I'm still on
yes.
Zoom. I'll call you back. Okay, I see brothers wearing turbans.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Brothers wearing long gowns. Sisters are pretty uniform.
Yes, sir.
You know, but when it comes down to Al-Islam, they do not wear the bow tie in the suit.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So, I mean, some of them do, some don't. So, but the point is there a difference in dress code?
Yes, there's cultural differences in dress code. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the brothers from Al-Islam are in Arabia, where loosely fitting clothes is better for the desert life. Their women are dressed modestly, just like our women. But as you see, the modest dress is even different in the Al-Islam than our sisters here in the Nation of Islam. But they're all, you know, men are dressed modestly, women are dressed modestly. It's cultural. They even have beards that are, you know, and we have the clean shaven face with no beard. They, you know, it's cultural. And that's what, we exercise our original qualities of being able to adapt in our environment and still carry on a modest way of dress, both male and female, but culturally sensitive to where we are as well, you know, in America. Okay. So that's where our dress kind of reflects the modest dress, yet cultural influences of where we are located in America, where in the Western Hemisphere.
Okay. Okay, now, when you say code of conduct, what do you mean by that?
I mean that a list of divinely imposed policies and a divinely imposed laws in which we abide by to preserve and maintain the sanctity of positive male and female relationships in the home and outside of the home. something to preserve ourselves and preserve our wives and our husbands, to preserve one another, to also be able to simultaneously carry ourselves in a way that can teach the next generation how to also carry these attributes to preserve future relationships. Every species has a law, has a code. And us being the superior, the most superior of species on the planet Earth, our code is more important, because we've been given commission to govern and maintain the Earth and even take care of all the other species. And that code of conduct has to fall in line with the preservation of our species, the preservation of positive male and female relationships, the preservation of our offspring, to guarantee the evolution of our species, to make sure that our offspring is always better, stronger, more capable than the previous generation. We must have a code to ensure this, to enable us to continue to function in that superior species paradigm.
Okay, so when you say a code of conduct for women and a code of conduct for men, you say both had a code of conduct.
Yes, sir.
And what is the code of conduct under the teachings that you think is commissioned by God for people to foster better relationships? What is the role of the woman in a relationship and their daughters?
Well, the role of the woman is to be a comforter, a nurturer, a helpmeet, a doctor, a complement, and a motivator of the man, of man's purpose and ambition in life. Her role, her kitchen is like an infirmary. It heals and maintains the family. Her bosom is a comforter. Her voice massages the spirit of her man.
Now, one of the biggest criticisms of most religious groups, Christian, Islam, Judaism, major Western religion, and as Brother Hemrick would say, when you say Western, you mean white influenced religion. When many people feel that all those religions are very sexist, because the women generally are people that mainly just raise the children and comfort the man, as you say, and support the male. And in this day and age of the women's movement, to break away from that, it has created a lot of conflict with regards to that. Right now, in some Islamic theocracies, there's a fight about women can't drive cars, women can't go to school, women can't be out without their man, and they have to be fully clothed and face covered and everything like that, where men don't have to do that. So is that sexist, or is that just a part of the code? And even some of them practice that here. Is that correct?
That practice you mentioned is correct for those who practice, who use the teachings of Islam, Christianity, Judaism, whatsoever, to demean women. That's a Western mindset. So has Islam been affected by that Western mindset? The the Caucasian, that Caucasian Arab. In Islam, in the nation of Islam, our women walk beside us. We are the only Islamic spiritual system that have women that are ministers as well as men. Women have similar roles in the mosque as men do. We have a brother captain of FOI, and we have a sister captain of MGT. We have a brother lieutenant of FOI. We have a sister lieutenant of MGT.
But isn't it true that in the mosque on Juma, the women sit on one side, the men sit on another side?
Yes, sir. And that's not because of an inequity. That's because the reality of the attraction of the opposite genders, that this society in which we have been forced to live in exploits and uses in a hypersexualized manner to demean women and to create an environment where men are lacking in control of their lower selves as well. It is a way the Nation of Islam creates an environment to address every non-original vice that this devil has forced us to abide by. It's a perfect environment to recreate a once God that has been made into a mortal to retransform him back into a God state. It addresses that. When brothers come into the mosque, they are searched to make sure that they don't have anything from the world that they bring in that can harm themselves or others into the mosque. That's why no shootings has happened at our mosque, other than back in the 60s when the police tried to run up in the mosque out of aggression, and some of them were, you know, killed, and while some of our brothers were lost as well. But there has never been a mass shooting at no mosque, Muhammad's mosque, in America. No Nation of Islam Muhammad Mosque. There has never been a mass shooting inside of our mosques. Okay. We create an environment to challenge the world's vices of uncivility.
Didn't they have a shootout on Broadway with the police shot Minister Arthur and a few of the other brothers?
Well, that wasn't in a mosque. I just addressed the fact that there was no shooting in the mosque.
You sure?
Not unless the police, like in the 60s, when Malcolm came to LA and was here to address the assault of Mosque Number 27 by the police when they ran up in there with their guns blazing.
Yeah, well,
there hasn't been, outside of that kind of an incident where the police, out of fear, try to aggress upon, let me just go up into this amount. There hasn't been any.
No civilians have went in.
Correct.
Okay.
Because we checked that. We checked that at the door.
What do you mean when you say the science of mating?
The science of mating means.
And where is that come from?
Okay. There's a law, according to the teachings of Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. There's a law that the original man was given to properly choose and to prepare for, properly choose and properly maintain a mate so that you can produce children that evolve greater than the parents that produced them. There's a science. Usually that science came from the parents who knew the children so well that they were able to pick a proper mate for their child that will ensure that child had the one that was, you know, was perfect, was close to perfect for them to marry and bear offspring that will take the species, our people, into the future. future evolution and preservation of our people, the science of mating, the science of how to govern yourself and your household, how to interact, how to fulfill each other's roles, the husband being the protector, the survivor, the protector, the provider, and the secure, the woman being the comforter, the nurturer, and the helpmeet. That's the science. Science of how to choose, science of how to prepare, like what you said before, all the things I had to do to prepare for my queen, how to communicate, how to become one with.
But you know that there's a lot of, let me say this, you know, and I like I say, I've seen the nation convert a lot of people and made a lot of people very happy in there. They've been with the nation throughout their whole life. And my brother was a captain in the nation.
Yes, sir.
And so I worked with Captain Shaheed. And
yes, sir.
Brother Naeem Shah and all of them, we spoke and all that. But now, what I want to say is that most religions have dress codes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
They have mating codes. You know, they say some churches don't want you to marry nobody unless they're Christian and accept what they believe. What when you say the dress code, that many of our women are dressing in gladly clothes and things of nature, they get it from the dominant society, and that if they were more disciplined and culturally raised right, they wouldn't do that. But there's a lot of things that contribute. I in my home, and I'm pretty sure in Rasha T's home, and I know in Brother Hembrick's home, and I'm pretty sure in Mashinda's home, we had dress codes, personal.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. We watch our daughters, we say, you can't go out like that. You got to dress different. Churches had dress codes. I mean, people used to dress up to go to church. You know, I mean, now they don't, but at one time they did. You know, you wore some tie to church. That's what their Sunday go to meeting clothes were. Families had dress codes, community. What broke it down was the movement and the change and evolution of drugs and free, and this mindset that, you know, you can be free and people shouldn't judge you by how you dress.
Mm-hmm, yes, sir.
But they do, because your dress is a statement. That's why police have uniform, army have uniform,
right.
Nurses have uniform, you can go all up and down, doctors have certain uniforms, that's uniform, that's your statement of who you are, what you're about. So I understand that part. But I also understand the challenge of people who may not prescribe to organized spiritual structures. And they're not just rebellious. I see men don't wear shirts, trying to, talking about they got abs, walking around. I see women, I mean, we had mini skirts when I was in school. The question of dressing, the question of how the person dressed on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
There are many women that were out there in the streets that turned out to be excellent wives. And there's many women who were together and dressed ethically and principally turned out to be bad, got alcohol, drug addictions, because they felt that I didn't experience this, and then they get out there. So life is very diverse. And I just wanted to know from the standpoint of the point of even suggesting that there should be a unified global dress code for women and men, and behavior code and mating code. How challenging is that? You know, I mean, that's asking a lot of people.
Can I chime in a little bit with this conversation, because it's getting a little late, and I just wanted to make a comment about exactly what you're talking about, Professor Rob. And from what I could gather, what Brother Thomas is talking about, and some of my thoughts is, there should be, well, people are going to do what they want to do, and if we're in a situation like we're in, as far as here in the United States and worldwide, we should start looking at some commonality, Black people especially, some commonality into not being so provocative to the point that it's disturbing and making people feel uncomfortable when you come around that person. And the uncomfortable could be that you're being enticed into, you're being attracted to a person physically because of the way they're dressed. And I don't think that it should be to the point where there's one dress code for everyone, but it shouldn't be to the point where you're bringing on this unnecessary attention, which, you know, all men that are men is attracted to, you know, women that's going to show their body parts in this provocative type environment we live in. So I thought it was an excellent idea for him to come on and address that point. And I think that it was excellent. The responses was excellent. We kind of went in other areas, but that was fine. You know, it's to provoke intellectual thought. And then when it comes to the history, there I always say this, and I get it from Ziggy Marley, Bob Marley's son. There are many stories, both old and new. What is the real truth? And we can't, I don't even think we can fathom what's really the truth when it comes to, you know, thousands of years of history. You know, what's specifically true? So, I mean, we could do studies and reference books that were written and all of that and come to some type of conclusion. But the truth is, the fact is, we really don't know. We could just speculate on what is true and what is not when it comes to history. So I'm going to leave it right there. And for the sake of time, I wanted to go back to what I was going to in the beginning. I didn't have everything pulled up. And I'm a put that in, and then we can conclude, because we've been on about an hour and 25 minutes. So earlier I spoke about Professor Ra and Brother Hembry, Brother Mashinda, and myself on the Black Community News Forum on Monday. And the topic was related to the replacement theory, which is a real popular topic, you know, in news media. And we covered that. I think the show was excellent. So I just want to share where people can find that. So here we go. This is on YouTube. And it's the title is Conscious Corner, Black Community News Forum, Professor Amon Ra, historian Joe Hembry, and Brother Mashinda. And that was Monday, May 16th. Excellent show. I encourage everybody to go and check that out, who views this video. And then also, we had, let me stop sharing. There's another place you can access it, which is the website. Let me go to that. This is just all audio. And it's right here. And you go to the section podcast on the on the website, Community Education Network. And you just scroll down and you can see it here too, and you can listen to it just through audio. So those are two places where you can access Monday's show. It was an excellent show. So I would like to conclude. So we could go around one more time with closing comments, and we could talk about what we're going to do on Monday and Wednesday of next week. Okay, I'm going to start with Brother Machinda. Brother Machinda, any closing comments? Okay, let's go to Brother Hembrick. Brother Hembrick, any closing comments?
Oh, no, brother, I do, but it'll be too long and drawn out, so I just...
Okay, so we could do another show where we could address some of the things that were brought up, you know, so we can continue that, because that is good dialogue, and, you know, people can... It should provoke thought for people to go do more research. Okay, Professor Rye.
Yeah, we always teach in the culture of Kauai that there's a difference between relationship, male-female relationships, and connections. A relationship is deep, and it's the mutual appreciation of each other, highest values that you have for each other, and things of this nature. Then there's a flesh connection, and that's what Brother was talking about, where people just get together based upon just mutual abuse of each other's body and attractive to each other's body only, and there's no other aspect to the relationship. And there's a forced connection where people just impose. If you don't love me, I'll kill you. And then dependency, you know, some men depend on women, some women depend on men, like they're handicapped, you know. And then there's the what you call the money connection. Some people just get together based on money. Those are some of the major four dynamics of connection. But a relationship is deep, and it's spiritual also. But you look for the best in a person. Do they bring peace? Do they bring respect? And do they bring a sense of, as Brother Thomas said, comfort? But the woman is not just a comfort, but the man is too. He has to comfort the woman. And he makes her comfortable by being there and making sure that she feels secure, both financially, physically, and mentally, that he's not going to abuse her, he's not going to cuss her out. You know, and Africans practice this without religion. You know, I mean, their religion was everything. Everything was religious. Everything you did was religious. There was no books. Mm-hmm. You just saw God in rocks. You saw God in trees. You saw the creator. No, it's not God, but creator. They wouldn't refer to him as God.
Correct. That's right.
It is. It's like, so it's a beautiful thing. We should have more discussions on male-female relationships. Monday, we're going to try to have Brother Ronnie Foster on, who I've been trying to get to talk about his trips to Ghana and what life is on the continent of Africa. And so I'll try to solidify that by tomorrow. But anyway, again, I want to thank the brother for his comments and his you know, he be serious about what he think, and he does writings and we appreciate it.
Okay. Brother Roscani, can I just make a comment real quick?
Yes, sir.
Let me just say that, you know, many have said, you know, I heard what you said about history and whatnot, us not knowing and all of that. But, you know, many have said, you know, history is the best subject to reward your research, has been said by a plethora of elders And let me just say this about the beginning and religion. You know, with the Twa people, it was nature. African people practiced staying in tune with nature. Then as the culture went up the Nile, these things in nature took on a name, like the wind, like the sun, like the rain and whatnot. And let me just say this about history. From what's been documented, as far back as we can go, we must accept that. When something is dug up, to change the narrative on that, and then we must reanalyze what we thought, and it brings on a new truth. So until it can be dug up, and because now they're trying to decipher another type of metal nature right now. They've been on, which could reveal a whole lot of other stuff that we do not know presently. But what we do know presently, we must accept as true until something changes that narrative. That's all I want to say.
All right. Professor Robinson from Long Beach State, he said truth is forever evolving. So that falls in line with that. Okay, Brother Thomas, any concluding parting words?
Thank you, sir, for this opportunity to dialogue with some superior minds. Just want to say a few things. The root of my position is based upon my life. Even before I was blessed to realize that I've been a Muslim all my life and joined the Nation of Islam. I was a virgin before I got married. Until I got married, I didn't believe in that I had the right to expose myself to a woman and receive her who was not my wife. I practiced chastity until I got married. I have been divorced for 4 years after a 20-year marriage, and I went back to practicing chastity in preparation for my next marriage, if Allah wills. It's a code of conduct that we must qualify ourselves for, male and female, in order to prepare to be one with one another. That's what prompted this discussion. Also, we talked a lot about history and about Islam's roots and its dark origin. And I appreciate that dialogue because we are the original mothers and fathers of civilization. We are the first ones to practice, to not practice, but perfect oneness with each other. We're the first ones that even brought about such a relationship that spawned the invention of the term marriage. It was oneness, man one with woman. There was no walking behind, woman walking behind man. As you see, even in the great monuments of Egypt, man and woman are side by side. Pharaohs are crowned by queens, by women. When a pharaoh transitioned, they are smoothly transitioned into the spiritual realm by women. The man and woman's role are equal yet different. So Islam, the Nation of Islam, goes to the essence upon which man was originally created, righteous. Goes way beyond what can be dug up. It goes way beyond what these Caucasians use as tools to dig up, constantly finding us in some way, shape, form, or fashion. It goes way beyond that. There's an unwritten history in the mind of every Black man, woman, and child in existence. And every time you purify your soul and become one with the Creator, dross is removed from your brain and you are exposed with that unwritten history that spans far beyond what one can dig up. That's why history is ever changing and ever evolving. As long as a Black man and woman exists, we have access to the very beginning of all creation. And that is what the Nation of Islam and the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad begins and starts from. When atoms just existed and a divine, supreme, superior science and being, mind, began to control and manipulate atomic particles to create life upon which laid the foundation for all creation. That's where the teachings go. You can't dig that up. You can't dig that up. That was before the earth was created. That's where the nation goes. Before the earth was created. We are not Africans. We are universal men and women. The universe is where we came from. Africa, or the earth, was the foundation upon which that first creation set once he created, or the creator created himself. He needed a foundation to set on. And he simultaneously created the earth while he was creating his vessel to land on, to exist on. Now, that's a science that Henrik or anybody can attest, but a third grade educated man told us about that unwritten past. And he uses the laws of the universe and science and physics to prove it, mathematics. Hmm. In closing, Henrik talked about Dr. Wesley Muhammad, me using sources outside of the nation. Well, Dr. Wesley Muhammad, I challenge you to read his books. All he has is quotes from your European scholars that you have so much faith in outside of the Nation of Islam. There's a book that I posted by Tariq Berry called The Unknown Arabs, Clear Definitive Proof of the Dark Complexion of the Original Arabs and Arab Origin of the So-Called African Americans, by Tariq Berry. That is by a brother that's not even in the Nation of Islam. Along with all of the authors and all of the references that the hundreds of references that Dr. Wesley Muhammad puts in his books to validate Black Islam prior to the invasion and conquest of the Hyksos and the Persians and the Byzantinians. That's a fact, cannot be disputed. And I challenge you, before you ridicule a Muslim scholar, PhD, religious scholar from those well-respected Caucasian universities that you feel I should somehow research. That's where he got his PhD. And he quotes them regularly. I challenge you to read his books, starting with what I just told you. Starting with God's Black Prophets, and Black Arabia, and the African Origin of Islam. He also went on, you could go on YouTube and find the truth about Malcolm's assassination, the fact that Malcolm did not have a problem with the wives of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because Malcolm went to Arabia twice, and Malcolm studied the Bible and the Quran about great prophets having more than one wife. He did not have a problem with that. He had a problem when the Nation of Islam tried to remove him from his home because it no longer was his when he left the nation. He had a problem with him being expelled from that home and not having a home for his wife and children. But see, if you study the truth instead of listening to your European Western propagandizing of the misinformed so-called story of Malcolm, you would know this. But I posted a video for you that will help you gain the truth of what you lack from your lack of really doing research about this matter. It was never the wives. Abraham had wives. Muhammad, peace and blessed be upon him, had wives. We have Moses had wives. No, sir. All the prophets of the past had wives. And why was it important for Elijah Muhammad in closing to prove that the black man can take on more than one wife? Could it be because in 2022, the black woman outnumbers the black man, and we must or may consider qualifying ourselves to have to take on more than one wife someday in the future to take care of our families so our women won't have to go outside looking for a husband? Could that be the case? Because the nation always adapts towards the circumstances like Africans have always done in the history of us being here on this planet, adapt to any extreme situation and conquer it.
All right, Brother Thomas. Appreciate what you're saying. And we have a lot of things that, like Neely Fuller said, we're still learning. So we can our information intake is evolving, you know, to hopefully better ourselves and our environments. Okay, so next week we have Damian McCallman is our guest. He's a senior program coordinator for the program Elevate Your Game. And I just want to thank everybody for participating this evening. And Brother Thomas, keep coming back. Enjoy your commentary. Very excellent. And Professor Rob, Bashinda, Brother Hembrick, appreciate them also. So I'm going to conclude, and Professor Rob, I will talk to you about next week. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Have a good evening.
Yes, sir.